The feeding of the 5,000 is recorded in all four Gospels. In fact, Mark records a second feeding of 4,000. This serves to remind us of the importance with which the early church viewed this miracle. I don't know about you, I love sitting down and having a meal with people. And you know what it's like? You chat, don't you? And the chatter comes round to something maybe that happened years ago, and you all share a bit of the story, and you all laugh, and you know that next time you meet together for a meal, the same story will come up again, and you'll all laugh again. And it's handed down from generation to generation. Well, this is a bit like this miracle, handed down from generation to generation, because it was just such an amazing thing. And the fact that all four Gospels record it is very important. Immediately before our Gospel reading this morning, we're told Jesus' cousin, good friend and trailblazer, John the Baptist, has been beheaded by Herod as a party favour for his daughter. And you think you worried about what to get for party favours? What I didn't realise, and it's so easy to miss it, is that although the Bible for us is divided into chapters, if we're not careful, we lose that continuity. So I tended to view the beheading of John the Baptist as one story and feeding of the 5,000 as another. But in fact, they are linked. And when this happened, Jesus is grieving. John's disciples came and they told Jesus about John's murder. And it's hard to imagine the grief that Jesus must have been feeling. Many of us have had horrible news of loved ones' deaths. And when it's an untimely death, it's even worse. And I have no idea what it would be like to hear of a loved one's murder or execution. I worked for many years in hospital registering deaths, and because it was a big teaching hospital, I would be registering somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 deaths a year, a very busy hospital. And I saw the sadness in relatives day by day, especially those who were facing a loved one's traumatic death, like John the Baptist. Jesus is obviously shaken. And we're told in verse 13, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. He was suffering horrible grief and he just wanted to be alone. We have to understand at this point that his ministry was extremely popular. Thousands of people were following him. Everybody wanted a piece of him. Everyone wanted something from him. And it's hard to hold up under those kind of circumstances and the demands day in and day out. But when you're grieving and sad, it's almost impossible to give that much of yourself. Jesus needed a rest. And his inclination was to get away and to grieve. Luke's gospel tells us that he withdrew to Bethsaida Julius on the northeast shore of the Lake of Galilee. Jesus and his disciples obviously went by boat, but the crowds, having worked out where Jesus was going, travelled around the lake on foot and got there first. I expect some of you have watched the story of Diana, Princess of Wales, and how the press pursued her and pursued her and pursued her. It actually made her life very unhappy in parts. And I guess it was a little bit like that for Jesus. You're trying to get away from the crowds, trying to escape, go across by boat, and they sussed it out and they ran round on foot. When he got there, the crowds were so big, it was like a football arena. And if you want to imagine what 5,000 people look like, if you've ever been into Central Hall, Westminster, which is Methodist Central Hall, that congregation is 2,500, so double that, and that's kind of what 5,000 looks like. We're told 5,000 men, and there's women and children on top of that, so it could be a huge amount more. What would we do in a situation like that? Would we feel angry? Want to scream or cry? Get back in a boat? Fall even into even greater depression? Let's get into the story as a character. Jesus is grieving. When did you last feel sad? Perhaps the loss of a loved one. And when I wrote this sermon, and I'll explain it later, there's somebody in church this morning that I didn't know was going to be here. And I know their hearts are sad today. Maybe you've moved from a house where you were very happy. Perhaps you're sad at the loss of a loved pet. What you wanted to do most was hide away and be on your own. Susanna Wesley had 19 children. They didn't all survive, but she had 19 children. John and Charles were two of her sons. She was married to Samuel. But can you imagine what it would have been like in probably quite a small home if you wanted a bit of peace and quiet? You can forget it. But she had a plan. She would put her apron over her head. And the children knew when Mummy had her apron over her head, you were not to disturb her. Might have only been 5 or 10 minutes, but it was her time. It was her time to be quiet and to be peaceful and to be solitary. And they knew that they mustn't disturb her. What does Jesus experience? Well, verse 14 tells us that upon seeing the huge crowd, the Son of God had compassion on them and healed the sick. Jesus felt compassion, not anger, not frustration, not depression, no tears. He felt compassion. The word compassion means a feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another who is stricken by misfortune, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate their suffering. And that's what Jesus experienced, even in his terrible grief and exhaustion, when he saw the crowds who so needed him. Once, the late Colonel Harlan Saunders, and you think, well, I don't know who he is. Well, if I tell you he's the founder of the Kentucky Fried Chicken, that's Saunders, Colonel Saunders. He was on an aeroplane when an infant was screaming and would not stop, even for the mother and the flight attendants who had tried their best. Finally, the colonel asked if he might hold the baby, and he gently rocked it to sleep. Later, a passenger said, "We all appreciate what you did for us." Colonel Saunders replied quietly, "I didn't do it for us. I did it for the baby." Jesus felt compassion. He wanted to be alone, but he felt compassion for the crowd. The setting provided Jesus with a chance to challenge the faith of his followers. Excuse me. The disciples wanted the crowds to return to the local towns from whence they'd come for their evening meals, but Jesus commanded the disciples to feed the people. How could they? Among all of his followers, all they possessed were 5 small loaves the size of dinner rolls and 2 dried fish. This food would have normally fed 2 people. Small rolls and fish marked the food of the poor. The contemporaries of Jesus baked small loaves, useful for individual meals alone or for dipping into food at communal gatherings. Without utensils, people used these small loaves as the only means for clean eating. The loaves were usually baked from barley grain, since the wheat grain was considered a luxury for the rich. During the time of Jesus, fish was a staple food in Palestine. The government controlled the catch and production of fish from the Sea of Galilee, a bit like we've had cod stocks monitored, haven't we, for some years now. Although I believe that is turning around, I believe that the cod population's growing and growing again, which is good. Fish could be dried, pickled, cured, or salted, and it was more easily distributed in these states. Thus, people preferred it as a protein source. Since the beginning of civilization, meals have been a time of social interaction. We meet friends for lunch, family for dinner, and we celebrate community leaders with banquets. While the different meals require different dress, manners, and conversation, every meal can begin or deepen a relationship. And I think of our family who were with us on Friday, Naomi and Richard, her husband, and their two children, Ethan, who's 6, and Fionn, who's 9 months old. Fionn, like her grandmother, loves food. I like cooking it, and I definitely like eating it. So does Fionn. But she doesn't quite get the change between savoury and sweet. So she'll be enjoying something savoury, in this case, roast beef, roast potatoes, vegetables, and she polished off the lot. Then we swap to fruit crumble. And her face is an absolute picture as she pulls her face, you're not sure about this at all, and then suddenly the realisation dawns, actually this is quite nice, and she keeps banging on her high chair because she wants more, and poor Naomi can't eat quick enough before, you know, it's another spoon, keeps shoving it in. And those are the kind of lovely fellowships that we enjoy, aren't they, with our family. I saw Anne there, look at her son, I bet there's been some fellowship round their meal tables. But it's a lovely thing to do, isn't it, to share food together. What turns a simple meal into an event, something that people talk about for years afterwards, is what I said at the beginning. You know, you're sharing funny story, and you'll share it again when you meet next time. Jesus created such an event when he took the food for 2 people and fed over 5,000. Imagine for a moment that you're part of the crowd in the story of the miracle of loaves and fishes. You've been listening intently to Jesus' words all day. You've travelled a long distance. I was saying in Chilton, it's a bit like when you're sitting here on Sunday morning and watching the clock and wishing she'd shut up with her sermon because your roast lamb, you're sure you can smell it from round the corner. But the people were hanging on to his words, to, you know, what he was saying. They travelled a long distance and they were tired and hungry, and suddenly you realise that you've brought nothing with you to eat. And you've heard Jesus tell the disciples to find the food for the people, but to make matters worse, all they've got is 5 small loaves of bread and 2 small fish. But you see Jesus take the food and bless it, give it to the crowd. After the meal, you see the disciples gather up the broken leftover pieces until 12 baskets are filled. There is certainly significance in the satisfaction of the crowd and the 12 baskets of scraps, but we probably shouldn't call them scraps, as they were more likely to have been the broken portions of bread and fish ready for distribution rather than bits that were gathered up afterwards. And the miracle reminds us that God provided for the 12 tribes of Israel during their wilderness journey, those 12 baskets of leftover fish. So he will provide for the messianic banquet, both now and in the last day. God doesn't mind what we offer him, however small it is, because he can use anything that we offer him in faith. In order for God to feed the crowd spiritually, he had to feed them physically. For without the resource of physical food, the people could not receive the spiritual food. God accepts us for who we are, and in doing so, accepts what we offer him and our thanksgiving. Our offering can be big or small. God doesn't mind how much we offer, because he uses whatever we offer to do his work in our world and in our daily lives. When God accepts our individual offerings, he blesses them, he combines them with offerings of fellow believers, and he uses this combination to bless and multiply what he gives to the people in return. So don't sit there thinking, I don't have much to give. We all have something to give, and it doesn't matter if it's only something small. When we give it together, God combines it and uses it to bless us and to bless those around us. May it be so for his name's sake. Amen.